Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We turn to the upper part of Daf Yud Beis, four lines from the top, where you see an underlined Omar Rav Nachmon Omar Rav. Before we learn the Gemara itself, let us take advantage of one of the features of our Gemara marking system, the Shas Ozer. We offer topic headings in the outside margin under the word nosei, nosei being topic. From time to time, you will also see the expression mivneh, mivneh indicating a structural note which attempts to explain the appearance of different markings as they appear. In this case, we read the nosei, Dino shel Rav Nachmon Omar Rav, the law that's featured by Rav Nachman Amrav that states, Ra echad sheshochat, if you notice someone doing a shechita, a slaughtering, im ra'ohu mitchila v'ad sof, if you are witnessing his action, his slaughtering action, from beginning till end, muter le'echol mishchitaso, and of course you notice that he did a smooth shechita job, you can then eat from his shechita. That's as far as his basic halacha is concerned. The Gemara will try to then analyze what are the circumstances behind his ruling. This is featured in under our Mivneh heading, where we feature a double underline. As you can see in the Gemara text itself, you'll notice a few expressions with this double underline. They represent Shlavei Birur. These are stages in trying to clarify what is he, Rav Nachman Omar Rav, talking about. So now we turn to the Gemara, Omar of Nachman Omar Rav, Ra echad sheshochat. If you notice someone doing a shechita, im ra'ohu mitchila v'ad sof, muter le'echol mishchita. So if you see him mitchila, from beginning, ad sof, until the end, then you can eat from his shechita, you can eat from that meat. V'im rav, if you don't witness his behavior, his shechita action, from beginning till end, osur le'echol mishchita, so then you cannot partake of the meat. Heichi domi. Notice that we have this double underline, which we featured earlier under our Mivneh heading. These are stages in trying to understand Heichi domi. What are the circumstances regarding this fellow? Besides that, we also have a long question marking. There's a shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. This indicates a long question. In other words, all of the lines of Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line are part of this effort in trying to understand Heichi domi, what are we talking about? At the end of the long question marking, on that line, you'll notice again a double underline under the word the Olam. At this point, the Gemara will then be responding what the circumstances are. So the Gemara asks, Heichi domi, what are the circumstances behind this person that you are witnessing? Idi yoda de gomir, if you know that he, the one who's slaughtering, knows all of the laws of Shechita, then Loma Li Ro, of what necessity is there for me to witness what he is doing? I can easily rely on him even without my watching him. The E Diyoda de Lo Gomir Pshita. And if I know that he, the one who's slaughtering, does not know the laws of Shechita, then it's obvious that you will need to watch him. And if you don't see him, it will be usher to eat from his shechita. Because if you know he does not know the laws of shechita, it's very likely that he paused in the middle or did a downward action, a drisa action, during the shechita, which is forbidden. The ela, so what must be? The lo yoda I gomir I lo gomir. You don't know whether he is gomir, knowledgeable or not. Well, if that be, and maybe then Rav Nachman Rav is coming to tell me, we don't rely on him until you know that he knows. But to that we raise a question. If this is the situation that you don't know whether he knows or not, Still, what is the necessity of my watching him? Lema, why not say the rule? There's a klal. Roiv mitzuyin eitzel shchita mumchen hein. The majority of people that are found in the context of slaughtering, that are doing the act of slaughtering, they are expert. So I can rely on the rove, on the fact that the majority of people that involve themselves in shchita are knowledgeable. Mi lo tanya, do we not have the following Tanaic source which teaches us this principle? The following you can see in a frame in our Gemara marking system. That which appears in frames is of a Tanaic origin. The source says, Hare shemotza tarnegol shchuta b'shchut, you noticed a slaughtered chicken in the market area. Oy sha'amar l'shlucha, or you told your emissary, say shchot, you please go and slaughter for me. V'halach u'matzah shochud, and then you go and you find in your you find that it was shechted. Cheskaso shochud, you can rely on the fact that it was shechted and not just killed, but it was experienced a proper shechita. Alma, you can see from this Amrinon that we say roiv mitzuyin eitzel shechita mumchen hein, that the majority of people that involve themselves with shechita are expert. Rashi adds, "Mumchen hein she'im lo haya mumchen lo haya shochet." If someone wasn't expert, he wouldn't get involved in the first place. Hochanami. So too with regard to our case, the Rav Nachman Amarav's story of someone doing a shechita. Lema rov mitzuyin eso shechita mumchen hein. Why not apply this rule? And the question then is, why do I have to watch him from beginning till end? The Gemara answers, Lo'oilom diyoda delo gomir. The situation Rav Nachman Amarav was talking about was a person who you knew did not know the laws. You knew definitively that he is ignorant of the laws of shechita. Okagon, and now the question then was, if that be the case, then his teaching is obvious that you have to watch him from beginning to end. What is the necessity of having Rav Nachman or Rav tell us that you have to watch him from beginning to end when it's so obvious to us if you are dealing with someone who is clearly ignorant of the laws of Shechita? So the Gemara goes on to explain, Ukegoin deshochat kamon chad simen shapir. We watched him doing the first of the two neck organs. In the Shechita, you have to cut the majority of both neck organs, the trachea and esophagus. And the scenario that Rav Nachman Rav is addressing is that you saw him cut one of the neck organs, one of the two, properly. Ma'u d'tema, I might have thought midahai shapir, from the fact that he did the first one properly, hach nami shapir, the second one he will do properly, even if I don't watch him. Komash malon, hai isramuye isrami lei. What Rav Nachman Rav is telling us, that if you notice the first one being done properly, it just happened that way. It was, we'll say, by chance or by luck. Edoch, the second neck organ, if I don't watch him, Shema Shah, Shema Doras, it could very well be that he will pause or he will do a downward pressure motion, which is not acceptable in Shechita. Therefore, you have to watch him from beginning till end and not rely on the fact that you saw him do the first of the two smoothly. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that we have assigned to this upcoming Gemara under the Nosei heading, I Chazoka Shaliach Oise Shlichuso. Do we say that you can rely on your emissary having carried out the mission you assigned him to do? As we go on in the Gemara, we'll notice a little house marking, and that is explained under the Mivneh. We will see here Shnei Dugmois, two examples im Totsaot Hafuchot, with opposite results. Beinyin Shliach Oise Shlichuso, regarding this topic of, does a Shliach carry out his mission? Can you rely on him to have carried out the mission? Two examples. One involves where you say Tsei Ushchot, go and shecht for me. A second example, Tsei Utrom, where you order someone, you ask someone, please go and tithe my produce for me. Tithing is applicable to produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael, where we tithe, we remove trumos and maestros, Can you, when you ask someone to tithe your produce, can you rely on him as having done that? Turning back to the Gemara, Bomine Rav Dimi Bar Yosef Me Rav Nachman. Rav Dimi asks of Rav Nachman, Ha'oimer Lishlucho, if you request of your shaliach, of someone you want to, your emissary, someone you want to send on a mission, say Ushchot, please go and slaughter for me. V'holachu motza shochut mahu. And you go and find your animals to have been slaughtered. Can you rely on the person who you sent to do it as having done a proper shechita? Omar lo cheskoso shochut. You can rely on the shaliach as having done the shechita. Ha'omer l'shlucho tsei utrom v'holachu motza torum. You ask someone to go and tithe your produce for you, and you go and find that it has been tithed. My, can I rely on that, and on my emissary as having done that which I requested of him? Omar le, ein cheskoso torum. To this, we have the surprising response: no, you cannot assume that it was tithed. The Gemara asks, monafshach. Either way, if we are seeking some form of consistency in his rulings, monafshach, either way you look at it, e chazok oshliach osheshlichuso, if you say that an emissary carries out what you asked him to do, and as a result of that, the shechita, the shechted animals that you found, you can assume was a result of the actions of the one you asked to do, afilu trumanami, then when it comes to the tithing, we should rely on him as well. The e ain chazoka shliach osishuchuso. And if you say that you can't rely on the emissary as having done that which you asked of him, afilu shchita namilo, then when it comes to the shchita, you shouldn't be able to rely on the shchita as having been done by the one you asked, and hence you shouldn't be able to rely on the meat and consume it. So he answered, this is Rav Nachman answers back. He answers with an opening comment that Rashi says, Rashi describes as an offhanded comment. L'chi techul alo kuro de milcha. Literally, he says, go and measure for me a kur, which is a quantity of salt. In other words, before I answer, go and measure for me a core of salt. And the way Rashi says it, you do this for me, and in exchange for doing that, I will tell you the answer. However, Rashi adds, ubedichusa bi'amu, which means it's sort of like an offhanded remark. Before going any further in the Gemara, just notice also that with this, we're about to start what we call a long answer. This is described or illustrated by the tuff that you see encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a tuff that's encircled, that's a teretz, with a descending vertical dashed line indicating the length of the answer. All of these lines will help in forming the answer. So Rav Nachman says, after you measure for me a quantity of salt, I will answer your question. And he answers, Li'olam ein chazoka shliach osushukuso. One cannot rely on someone as having carried out that which you requested of him. Ushchita, with regard to the slaughtered meat that you find, inami inishachrina shama v'yazav shochat, even if someone else happened to hear your request for it to be shechted, and he went, this outsider went and shechted it, roiv mitzuyin eitzel shchita mumchen hein, the majority of people that involve themselves with the action of slaughtering are expert, and it's based on that that you are able to eat the meat, and not based on the fact that the one you asked to shecht carried it out. However, with regard to truma dilma inish achrina shama v'yazav atoram, adopting the same scenario with regard to that which we mentioned with the shechita, we apply that now to the truma that maybe someone else heard and did it. In the case of truma, this poses a problem. Havi le torem shalomidas, it is someone who is doing the tithing without the knowledge of the owner. That's torem shalomidas. V'ha torem shalomidas ein shumaso truma. One who tithes without the express knowledge of the owner of the produce, his action is a non-action. It's not considered a legitimate tithing. so that the same scenario with regard to Shechita and Truma have opposite results. In the case of Shechita, if someone else other than the one you asked does it, it's still okay because of the principle of Rov Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumenein. With regard to tithing, if someone else does the tithing, well, he's not your emissary, he's not your shaliach. And if someone else does it, it's called Torim Shel Midas, and based on Gzeres HaKosuvs from Truma, where it says Gam Atem, we learn that someone else who does it without your knowledge, his tithing is not acceptable. At this point, the Gemara delves into the issue of Rov Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. We have a topic heading on the outside margin, in which we've written under the Nosei heading Nisayon, an attempt, Lomar, to establish the Rov Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein Machlokes Tanoim. There is an attempt on the part of the Gemara to say that this principle of the majority found by Shechita are considered expert is itself a Tanaic controversy. We've presented this in the Gemara text as a long question, and hence you see the encircled shin to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with the vertical descending line indicating the length of this. This is a question. Lema is a word indicating a question. Should we say, or can we say, that this is a machlokas tanoim? At the end of this, you will see Rav Nachman Yitzchok responds and says, no, we're not going to say it's a machlokas tanoim, but rather everyone, all of the tanoim, will accept that Roiv Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. And then the question is, if that be the case, so then what is the controversy that we're about to see in the upcoming Tanaic source? What is it all about? So now, turning to the Gemara, Lema Roiv Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein Tanoihi. Can we say, or should we say, that the issue of the majority involving themselves with Shechita are considered expert? Tanoihi, that this issue is a machlokas tanoim. Desanya, we have the following Tanaic source. Hare she'avdu lo gidoyav v'tarnegoloisav, a person who had lost his goats or his chickens, v'holach u'motzun shchut, and then he finds his chickens or his goats, he finds them slaughtered. Rabbi Yehuda Oser, Rabbi Yehuda says you cannot partake of the meat, and Rabbi Chanina benoishu Rabbi Yosi Aglili matir, and Rabbi Chanina says you are allowed to partake of the meat. Omar Rebbe, Nirin Dvorim Shel Rebbe Yehuda, Shemotzon Ba'ashpa. I would adopt Rebbe Yehuda's approach, which is stringent, meaning forbidding the meat. That's in the case that you found your slaughtered chickens and goats in a garbage heap, an ashpa, garbage heap. The Divrei Rebbe Chanina, Benoshu Rebbe Yosi Aglili, Shemotzon Ba'ayis. And I would see the lenient approach. I would accept his approach that you can rely on the meat as being kosher if you found the slaughtered chickens and goats in one's house. Shemotzon babayis, you found it in your house or in a house. When looking at the first opinions here, you have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina. My lav the hokamiflgi. Is it not so that it's in the following that they argue? The Marsava Rabbi Chanina, who was stringent, Amrinon, Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shechita. Let us correct ourselves. Rabbi Chanina, who was lenient, would say that Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. Hence, you can eat it. That's why he says Matir. The Marsava Rabbi Yehuda, who is stringent, would hold Lo Amrinon Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. That we don't say that principle. At this point, then, our question has been presented, namely, the issue of Roiv Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen seems to be a machlokes tanoim between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina. Omar Rav Nachman took low. Rav Nachman says it's not. This is not the subject of their machlokes. The Kuli Alma Roiv Mitzvin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. Everyone is in agreement that the majority of those involving themselves with Shechita are expert. Ubed Bayis, the Kuli Alma Lo Pligi Deshori. And if you find slaughtered meat in one's house, everyone will agree that it's mutter, the meat is allowed. The Ashpa Shebeshuk, the Kuli Alma Lo Pligi Dosir. And if you find meat in the garbage heat of the marketplace, everyone will agree that it's clearly being disposed of because it's nevela, it's unkosher meat, and it's being thrown out. Ki pligi, The ashpa shebebayis, the circumstances of the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina concern finding the meat in a garbage heap that's next to one's house. Ashpa shebebayis, a garbage heap in one's house. In other words, it's not found on the counter or in the refrigerator of somebody, but it's found in the garbage of someone's house. This is in distinction to the garbage of the shuk, the market. Mor Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda, who is stringent, says, Odom osui lahatil neveloso be'ashpo shebebayis. A person will throw out a nevela even in the garbage of one's house. Umor Sovar, Rabbi Chanina, who is lenient, holds, Ein Odom osui lahatil neveloso be'ashpo shebebayis. A person wouldn't throw out nevela meat, meaning unacceptable meat, into the garbage of one's house. Rashi explains, when you throw something out, it's going to go bad. It'll start to rot and cause a rotting smell, a terrible smell, to emerge from there. So, and of course, we can assume that we're not dealing with the situations where they gathered the garbage, every twice a day, where the meat wouldn't have a chance to start rotting. But rather, we're talking about a case where something that's put into the garbage would sit there for a while, giving enough time for it to rot. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says a person would throw out in his house garbage unacceptable meat, so that which you find in the Asher Shebebayis you cannot eat. According to Rabbi Chanina, who says a person would never throw into his house garbage unacceptable meat, what's it doing over there? It's probably placed there. It was probably placed there not long ago, and it's kosher, and people will eat from it. And it was placed there, so they maybe had no other place to put it, so he put it over there in the garbage in his house. But certainly he wasn't throwing out nevela meat. Otherwise, he would experience sirachon, rotting, and wouldn't have put it there in the first place. Omar Mar. Now we turn to focus on Rebbe, who seemed to moderate the machlokes, he offered his opinion on the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina. Omar Mar, Omar Rebbe, Nirin Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Shemotzon Ve'ashba. It appears to me, to accept Rabbi Yehuda, who was stringent, if you found it in the ashba. My ashpa. What's the ashpa that Rebbe is referring to? After all, in the Tanaic source that we had above, all that Rebbe said was it was found in the ashpa, but nothing more than that. So what is the ashpa that Rebbe is referring to? E lemo ashpa shebeshuk. If you are talking about the market garbage, the public garbage heap, well, ha amris dekuli alma lo pligi d'aser. It was said that everyone would agree it's usher. Rebbe wouldn't have to say that only Rabbi Yehuda would appear to be the way to go with regard to that. It's not a Rabbi Yehuda opinion. If the ashpa is an ashpa shebeshuk, everyone agrees that it's usher. So Rebbe wouldn't have to say that I accept his opinion with regard to ashpa shuk, giving us the impression that someone would disagree. So it must be that when Rebbe is saying I side with Rebbe Yehuda, or I accept his approach of stringency when found in the ashpa, it's a reference to the ashpa of the house. In fact, we said above that was a point of controversy. So Rebbe is accepting Rebbe Yehuda's opinion with regard to ashpa shebebayis. Emo seifa. The divrei Rebbe Chanina benoi shel Rebbe Yosi Aglili shemotzon bebayis. Rebbe in the Seifa said, I accept the lenient opinion, that of Rabbi Chanina, when found in the house. My bias, what's meant by the house? Ilei mo bias mamish, if it's a reference to found in the house, literally, like we said before, on the countertop, in a refrigerator, well, ho amris dekuli alma lo pligi d'shori. But we established above that everyone would agree that it's acceptable, that the meat's considered kosher, if you found slaughtered meat in a fridge. That everyone agrees it's kosher. So why would Rebbe say that I accept Rabbi Chanina's approach with regard to that? That's everyone's approach. Elo pshita ba'ashpa shebebayis. So it must be that what Rebbe is referring to when he says, I like Rebbe Chanina when found in the house, it's a reference to the garbage of the house, the house garbage pail. And that's when I can see that one should be lenient. Now, if you accept the analysis of the last few lines, you'll notice we've dashed, underlined two expressions, pshita ashpa shebayis, three lines from the bottom, at which point we had written in that there Rebbe would aser, and here the same scenario, ashpa shebayis, and we've written between the lines that he's matir. Well, if you're going to learn like that, then kashya the Rebbe ad the Rebbe, then we have an inherent contradiction within Rebbe. The Gemara answers, Hochi ka'omar, thusly we are to understand what Rebbe is doing in this source. Rebbe is not saying his own opinion. He's not offering his own opinion. He is actually coming to moderate the seeming controversy between Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Chanina. Moderate it, or we'll say limit it, as follows. Nirin divrei Rebbe Yehuda le Rebbe Chanina ben Osh Rebbe Yossi Aglili. Namely, the stringent approach that Rebbe Yehuda stated appears acceptable to Rebbe Chanina. In other words, Rebbe Chanina also would be stringent. Be'ashpa shebeshuk. If one found meat in the marketplace, then everybody would agree that the meat is forbidden. She'af Rebbe Chanina, benosh Rebbe Yossi Aglili, lo nechlak olov, elo be'ashpa shebebayis. Even Rebbe Chanina, who was lenient, his only point of machlokas was when found in the garbage, the house garbage. Abol ba'ashpa shebeshuk modilei. But in the public garbage heap, the lenient Rebbe Chanina would agree to forbid. And the Nirin, the Chule, there Rebbe would simply continue this same type of reasoning with regard to Nirin, Divrei Rebbe Chanina, to Rebbe Yehuda, under circumstances where you find meat in the house. That everyone, even the stringent opinion Rebbe Yehuda, would agree that if you find meat in the house, that you would be matir. Chutz Micheri Shoyte V'Koton Shema Yikalkelu Es Shchitason. In the Mishnah, the word yikalkalu is spelled, of course, as you can see, with a yud in it. Shema kilkalu lo katani. It doesn't say in the post facto form, maybe shema, maybe they messed up. Hello, shema yikalkalu. The difference in grammar will be appreciated as we go on in our explanation. But just to go over the case of the Mishnah was mentioning that there is a case that we cannot accept, even post facto, the slaughtering of a cheresh shoyte v'katan. That the Mishnah had spoken about cases of bidi'evid that are acceptable. But in the case of Cheresh Shechita V'Katan, even B'di'eved, we cannot accept their Shechita. So now, the expression of Shema Kilkalu, it doesn't say, even though that would have been, we'll say, the smoother grammatical form of presenting matters. Yet the Mishnah opts to use the expression Shema Yikalkalu. Rashi explains that this is mashma that they are mu'odim, that they are destined to mess up under future occasions as well. So based on this grammatic nuance, Omar Rava Zois Oimeres, we see from the Mishnah, Ein Moisrin Lohen Chulin L'chadchila, that you don't give to them meat, chulin, common meat, to slaughter, even if others are watching them. Don't give them under any circumstances, even if others are watching them, because they will mess up. The kulon sheshachtu v'achem roin oison shchitosan ksheira. This expression was dealt with quite extensively at the beginning of the perek. Here, and what we are about to say is based on Rashi's explanation, here we're going to be offering a what would sound on the surface as a slightly different explanation, but nevertheless, what we're saying conforms to that which was stated earlier in the perek, and that is that this vekulon includes the cheresh sheita vekoton. At the beginning of the perek, we placed a great deal of emphasis on that this vekulon is not referring to the cheresh sheita vekoton, but right now we're explaining as follows. It doesn't refer specifically to the cheresh sheita vekoton. That was really what the conclusion of the earlier discussion had been. However, the pronoun vekulon can, in fact, include the cheresh sheita vekoton that had been mentioned just before this phrase in the Mishnah. So, with all of that in mind, when we read vekulon sheshachtu v'achim roino yisam shosin kshera, we are saying that everyone, including the cheresh sheita vekoton, if their slaughtering was witnessed by others, and we're talking about post facto, as opposed to the discussion that immediately preceded this, that if they happened to have shechted, and they were supervised, their shechita is okay. So we can say as follows, that a cheresh sheita vekoton that happened to have done a shechita, and they were supervised from beginning to end, and you didn't notice any hitches in their action, you can partake of the shechita. With that, the Gemara asks, man tana de lobo inon kavono le shechita. Who is the Tana that says that one doesn't have to have a specific mindset, concentrated mindset when it comes to shechita? Kavona is intention. Intention, or as we said, mindset. Intention for the action. For example, when one performs a mitzvah, when one is going to sit in his sukkah, to sit and eat in the sukkah, one is expected to have kavana, I am now going to perform the mitzvah of sukkah. Or when one blows a shofar and wants to be yotze, hearing the shofar, he should have kavana, I am now about to mekayim, to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar blowing. With regard to shechita, since we're including as acceptable a cheresh sheita vekoton, and these are people that, because of their status, they're not capable of having intention and mindsets and concentration and these associated mental abilities, and nevertheless we're saying that their shechita is kosher, we are asking, who is the Tana that says that when it comes to shechita that one doesn't have to have specific intention for doing a proper shechita? It's enough that physically a proper shechita was done. And that apparently appears to be the opinion of our Mishnah. So who is it? Omar Rava. Rava answers, Rabbi Nosson he. This is the opinion of Rabbi Nosson. The Toni Oshaya Zeira de Min Chavraya. Oshaya taught the following source. The expression Demin Chavraya, Rashi says, Bnei HaYeshiva is one of the members of the yeshiva. He taught over the following Tanaic source. Zorak Sakin Lunoatza B'Koysel. A person threw a knife with the intention of it getting wedged into a wall. V'holach V'shochta Kedarka. And in its flight, the knife slaughtered an animal. Rabbi Nosson Machshir v'Chachamim Poslin. We've underlined only Rabbi Nosson's name because he is the opinion we are trying to emphasize. Rabbi Nosson says that this shechita is okay. Now, there was no intent for accomplishing a shechita. The knife was thrown in order to get it stuck in the wall, to get wedged in the wall. Maybe we had a budding knife thrower over here, and that was his intention. But as far as the shechita itself, it was accomplished without intention for shechita. Rabbi Nosson says that it's still considered okay. This, of course, is provided, and it goes without saying that the actual physical slicing of the neck, of the neck organs, was done without a hitch. In other words, the knife was in a smooth flight pattern, and It sliced the neck in a horizontal, non-piercing action. If that be the case, Rabbi Nosson says it's okay. Hu Tani La, Vahu Omar La. That means Oshaya said over the source, and he also ruled concerning this matter, Halacha Rabbi Nosson, that we are to follow Rabbi Nosson's lenient ruling. The Gemara asks, V'ha bo'inon moylechu mevi. Part of the expectation when it comes to Shechita is that one does a lateral, horizontal moving action of the knife, a push-pull, meaning in a slicing action. And the knife is not doing a slicing action in terms of a back-and-forth motion. It's in flight. So how come the Shechita is okay? So the Gemara answers one of two answers that can be provided. Rashi says there's another answer, but the Gemara says shaholcho bo kedarka. In fact, the knife was tossed. It sliced in flight toward the wall. It started slicing the neck of the animal in a shechita form, and it ricocheted off the wall, rebounded off the wall back to the animal's neck, and did again continue the cutting action. So with that you have a holocha and hova, a movement away and a movement back toward action. Rashi suggests, based on the Gemara, the Mishnah, Mishnayos and Gemara later on, that you don't have to have a holocha and hova action if the knife length is such that it can successfully cut rove of the simonim, rove of the neck organs, in a one-directional action. In other words, if you have a long knife, by simply moving the knife in one direction while cutting the neck, you can successfully cut rove of the neck organs. That, too, could have been offered as an explanation here. Namely, that, too, meaning he was using a long knife. As we continue in the Gemara, we enter a new sugya. On the outside margin, we have a no-say heading. It should be pointed out, before we start the Gemara, that this sugya lasts down through Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and that by our beginning the sugya today, at the end part of our shiur, we are in fact cutting the sugya into two sessions, we'll say. But since we're learning in the context of a daf yomi, we want to attempt to finish the daf, and therefore we'll start the sugya, but bearing in mind that it's important to see this sugya in its entirety. And this will be emphasized through the markings that we have provided. So in the outside margin, we have a topic heading, She'elas Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's name has been placed in a firebox because he is setting the basis for this entire sugya that lasts all the way down Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. She'elas Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan raises a question, presents a question. Katan, yesh loy machshava oy loy. Since in our previous discussion we encountered Rabbi Nosson, who said that Shechita doesn't need Kavana, Rabbi Yochanan raises a question, does a Katan have machshava? Now, that itself is rather abstract. So the example that Rashi features, and we've included that here in our introduction, Kagon b'shechitas kochim. For example, with regard to the slaughtering of sacrifices, debo'i kavona, there's an expectation that a sacrifice is slaughtered with kavona. This may be said in contrast to chulin, but with regard to kochim, there's an expectation that it's done with kavona, with specific intention. In other words, if someone is shechting a korban ola, he should be doing it with that in mind, that I am shechting this as a korban ola. And what happened? V'shochat katan ola l'shma. And a katan came along and shechted a korban ola, and declaring, I am shechting a korban ola. Can we rely on that or not? We have a mivneh heading that we see featured Roman numerals 1 and 2. These represent two Lashonas. So one is right here at the beginning of our sugya, and you'll see a little less than halfway down on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, you'll see a Roman numeral number 2, assuming you have a Yud Gimel Amud Aleph already in your possession. In addition to that, there will be use of triangles in this sugya, and they are referred to as ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take nature of this discussion, back and forth structure that appears here. With the triangle point facing upwards, those represent shlavim, stages. Kidei lahavin mahu be'etzem shelas Rabbi Yochanan. What is exactly Rabbi Yochanan's question? It's true we presented his question in our under our no say heading, but the Gemara will in effect refine that as we go along. In addition to that, the triangles with the point facing up have been accompanied by triangles in the space in the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text. Listed Aleph, Beis, etc., indicating the stage at which we are dealing. It may be interesting to note that at stage 1, we will see 3 stages to the discussion. It may not be the same number of stages when we come to stage 2, but we'll just wait and see till we get there. When the triangle form appears point facing downwards, that represents Dechios, a rejection of whatever was suggested in trying to understand the question. The question, namely, of Rabbi Yochanan. With all that having been said, let us begin the Gemara, bearing in mind that in the context of our shiur today, we will not be completing the entire sugya. We won't even be completing lashon number 1. That may necessitate a need to review what we have done when we begin Amir Sashem, the next shiur. So in the meantime, we start the question, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Bo'i Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya reports that Rabbi Yochanan asked the following: Katan yesh loy machshava o ein lo machshava. As we mentioned, an example of this would be when slaughtering kachim. The slaughtering of kachim of sacrifices necessitates intention, and the katan came along and shechted an ola, claiming that he was doing it as an ola. He announced, "I am doing an ola." Is that considered reliable or not? Omale Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami responds. He, in effect, questions this presentation. Hence, we've assigned a long question marking along with this comment. In effect, Rabbi Ami is going to deflect or dismiss the question of Rabbi Yochanan as it has been presented. Not that he is saying that Rabbi Yochanan never asked the question, but the issue is, what is he asking about? So, Amar le Rabbi Ami, v'tiboy le maisa. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan ask the question of, does a katan have maisa or not? The example of maisa will be more clearly understood as we go on in the Gemara. The Gemara will present an example of maisa. So Rabbi Ami is asking, why does Rabbi Yochanan not ask about maisa? Maishno maisa delo komi bayale. Why is it that Rabbi Yochanan didn't investigate as to whether a katan has maisa? Well, I'll tell you why he didn't ask about it. Disnan yeshlo maisa, because there's a Tanaic source indicating that they do have the capacity of maisa, which we haven't explained yet. But stay tuned. Well, by the same token, machshava nami lo teboyale, the issue of does a katan have machshava also should not be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. It shouldn't be an issue for Rabbi Yochanan. Disnan, because we have a Tanaic source that says ein lohen machshava, they don't have the capacity for machshava. Disnan, and this is now found in the following Tanaic source. So the terms maisa and machshava will be more clearly understood in the following context. In effect, we'll also see another application of the concept of machshava. We opened up the Gemara in the context of shchitas kochim, slaughtering of sacrifices. Now we're going to enter a new area in presenting the following example with regard to kalim, tumas, tuma vitara of kalim. Kalim is the issue concerning vessels, and the issue here is, does the object assume a kli status, enabling it to absorb ritual impurity? In other words, something that doesn't have a kli status, something that's not classified as a functional vessel, is something that will not absorb tuma, ritual impurity. We are interested in knowing, regarding the following, what we'll see very shortly, are they capable of absorbing ritual impurity? So now we'll learn the source and hopefully appreciate the terms maisa and machshava through the following examples. Disnan, This Tanaic source goes to the top line of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Ho'alon v'horimon v'egois. These are different types of fruits. Fruits with outer shells or peels to them. Shechokukum tinoikos lomud bohen ofar. Tinoikos are little children. Little children came along and took these fruits and hollowed them out, throwing out the fruit content, keeping the shell. For what purpose? Lomud bohen ofar. For as kids play in sandboxes, they wanted to use these shells for measuring dirt. Convenient type of spoon, scooper, or makeshift shovel that kids would play with. So if you have a child that took these fruits, hollowed them out, making them into a functional unit, or they made them into to a type of bowl or plate that's used on a balance scale. Timayin means these items that were essentially fashioned by a kid, by a child, they will be capable of absorbing tumah. The word timayin is interpreted as capable of absorbing tumah in the future. In other words, when these vessels come into contact with a source of tumah, the vessel will become tumah. Mitnei sheyesh lahen maisa. Rashi adds something here, and there's a very big machlokis here, Rashi and Tosfos, in understanding the sugya, but our shiurim are based primarily on the Rashi approach. So let us read the Rashi at the bottom, three lines from the bottom, sheyesh lahen maisa kagon zeh, like this case of the hollowing out of these fruit shells, shemaseyan mochichin, their action clearly shows the l'shem kli niskavnu, that they had an intention of forming a vessel. And here Rashi adds a feature of the Rashi explanation, v'gamhem oimrim kain, they also verbally express their intentions. So you have an action combined with their verbal declaration, and this is Rashi's approach to the sugya. Action combined with verbal declaration, v'yesh kan maise u'machshava, you have here in effect an action accompanied by expressed intent, hamoridin oso the Torah's kli, that enable this fruit shell to assume a vessel status. So this Tanaic source says that yesh len machshava ma'isa v'ein lohen machshava. What does that mean? So Rashi gives an example of this at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. V'ein lohen machshava kagon motzo l'klipas egois kemo shehoya. A child found a hollowed nut shell. For example, you have a walnut. When you split the walnut, you notice and you take out the meat content, the nut content of it, you have a shell that could serve as a spoon. V'choshev olei lomud. And the child said, oh, the child figured, here I've got this walnut, this is convenient for measuring sand or dirt. Or even if he used it as such. The child didn't perform an action to the shell itself. He used it for measuring, but he didn't make any structural changes to the item itself. Once again, reading that line again, Elo shelo osa bo maisa l'shem kli. If an adult had mere stated intention without doing something to this found nut shell, they would have tamein b'machshava, they would have been capable of absorbing tumah through the mere expressed intent. Disnan, the Mishnah says, kol hakelim yordim lidei tumah son b'machshava. Intent, even without action, is capable of instilling a vessel status to an item. However, that's only true if a bar machshav, if someone capable of intent, had the intent. But a child is not. So in this source you see the boundaries or the guidelines are stated very clearly that a katan has maisa and a katan does not have machshava. So what is Rabbi Yochanan's question? As far as the discovery of what his question is, the Gemara will go on with additional suggestions, and you can see through the markings triangles indicating the various stages in trying to determine what Rabbi Yochanan's question really is. But that will be the topic, Emir Tzasham, of our next shiur. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.